A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Quick question. How many cubic meters is your wardrobe?
I have no idea.
But you could probably tell me how many shirts you own, or roughly what that suitcase weighed last time you flew. We're fluent in count and weight. Volume is a foreign language.
That blind spot is the entire problem Daniel's getting at.
So Daniel sent us this one. He recently moved his entire home into Euroboxes, those industrial 60 by 40 centimeter containers built to the VDA 4500 spec, the ones that stack on Euro pallets and slot right into shipping containers. His bottleneck wasn't buying the boxes. It was estimating how many he needed. He walked into a plastic supplier, and they didn't ask how heavy his video gear was. They asked about volume, and he realized he couldn't give them even a rough answer.
Which is wild when you think about it. We're talking about someone who works in tech, thinks in systems, has moved 6 times in 10 years, and he still couldn't eyeball the cubic meters of his own home office.
That's the skill he wishes he'd had going in. How do you look at a bedroom, a kitchen, a pile of camera equipment, and translate it into a number that lets you order the right quantity of boxes, not after measuring everything with a tape? Eyeballing it and getting close enough.
Where do we even start with this?
I think we start with why our brains are so bad at it. Studies show humans systematically underestimate volume by 30 to 50%. We default to linear dimensions, length times width, and we just forget depth exists.
There's a name for that. It's called the area volume illusion. People see a surface and their brain anchors on the two-dimensional footprint. But the shelf has depth, and the objects on it have depth, and the space between those objects has depth. Your visual system is basically doing a two-dimensional calculation and calling it done.
Which explains why, when someone says how much stuff is in this closet, your brain serves up a flat image, not a volume.
There's another layer. We anchor on visible items and ignore the empty space between them. You look at a bookshelf and you see books. Your brain counts the books or estimates their combined width. It does not automatically compute the air gaps, the space behind the books, the volume above the top shelf. All of that is invisible to the estimation heuristic we reach for first.
You've got a double failure. Linear anchoring makes you think in two dimensions, and visibility bias makes you ignore the gaps. No wonder Daniel drew a blank.
There's a third thing that makes volume uniquely hard for household goods. Weight and volume are barely correlated. A tripod weighs maybe 2 kilos, but it's awkward and long and needs padding. It eats maybe 0.05 cubic meters in a box. Meanwhile, a stack of books weighing 10 kilos fits into 0.02 cubic meters. If you've spent your life lifting things and thinking heavy means big, your intuition is actively misleading you.
That tripod example is perfect. Daniel mentions exactly that. Camera tripod, 3 light stands, some audio gear. Weight-wise, you could carry it in one trip. Volume-wise, with padding, it's 4 Euroboxes.
That's the core of the transition he's trying to make. The world of industrial logistics doesn't care about weight for this class of goods. A standard Eurobox can handle far more weight than any home user is going to load into it. The constraint is dimensional. How many cubic meters of stuff do you have?
Let's get concrete. A standard Eurobox with a 60 by 40 footprint and the most common height of 32 centimeters. That's 0.0768 cubic meters per box.
A Euro pallet is 120 by 80 centimeters. That holds exactly 8 of these boxes per layer. A 20-foot shipping container holds 11 Euro pallets per layer. So you can see the chain box to pallet to container. The whole system is designed for volume arithmetic.
Which means if you can estimate the cubic meters of a room, you can divide by 0.0768 and get a rough box count. Add some padding for packing inefficiency, and you've got a number you can take to the supplier.
The question is how to get that cubic meter estimate without measuring every wall with a laser.
That's the skill Daniel's asking for, and I think the answer has 2 parts. One is a method you can do deliberately, the room as box calculation. The other is a trained intuition you build through calibration.
Let's walk through the deliberate method first because it's simpler than people think. You take a room, you estimate or measure its length, width, and height in meters. Multiply those three numbers. That's your raw cubic volume. Then you subtract 15 to 25% for structural elements. Walls, doors, built-in furniture that you're not moving, the space the bed frame occupies but isn't boxable.
A 4x5 meter bedroom with 2.5 meter ceilings, that's 50 cubic meters raw. Subtract 20%, you're at about 40 cubic meters of actually movable stuff.
40 cubic meters divided by 0.0768 per box. That's roughly 520 boxes if you packed perfectly. But you won't pack perfectly. Real-world packing efficiency for irregular household items is somewhere between 70 and 85%.
You add another 15 to 30%. Now you're at maybe 600 to 670 boxes for that bedroom.
Which sounds insane until you remember that a bedroom contains beds, mattresses, wardrobes full of clothes, shoes, books, maybe a desk, maybe exercise equipment. The volume adds up fast. Our intuition says a bedroom isn't that much stuff. The math says otherwise.
There's a faster shortcut, too, once you've internalized some benchmarks. Different categories of belongings have different volumetric densities. Clothes in fabric bins, roughly 0.15 cubic meters per 10 kilos. Books, 0.02 cubic meters per 10 kilos. Kitchen items like pots and pans and small appliances, around 0.08 cubic meters per 10 kilos.
If you know you've got about 30 kilos of clothes, you're looking at roughly 0.45 cubic meters, which is about 6 Euro boxes. You don't need to measure the clothes, you just need a ballpark weight and the density cheat sheet.
That's where the calibration practice comes in. Daniel's asking about eyeballing. The way you get good at eyeballing is, you guess, then you measure, then you note the error. Do that 10 times across different spaces. A bookshelf, a closet, a room, and your error rate drops fast.
There's actually research backing this up. People who do repeated volume estimation with immediate feedback improve their accuracy from roughly 40% error down to under 15% within 5 to 10 trials. It's not a talent. It's a trainable skill.
Which is encouraging because it means anyone listening can do this. Pick a shelf tonight. Guess its volume in cubic meters. Just eyeball it. Then grab a tape measure. See how close you got. Do that once a week for a month, and you'll develop an intuition that transfers to any space.
Once you have that intuition, the whole logistics chain opens up. You can walk into a room, think that's about 30 cubic meters, divide by 0.0768, add 25% for inefficiency, and you've got a box count. Takes 30 seconds.
What I love about this is that it inverts the usual moving experience. Normally, you guess how many boxes you need based on. You buy 40 cardboard boxes from the hardware store, run out halfway through the kitchen, panic buy 20 more, and end up with 11 empty ones. Volumetric estimation replaces vibes with arithmetic.
The arithmetic connects you to something bigger. Once you know your total household volume, you know how many pallets you need. Once you know pallets, you know whether you need a half container or a full container. You can get a quote for an international move that's actually accurate.
We've got the cognitive bias. Why volume is hard? We've got the room. Asbox method. We've got the density cheat sheet. And we've got the calibration drill. But I think there's a deeper question underneath all of this. Once you start thinking volumetrically, does it change what you choose to own?
That's the question that keeps me up at night. Or it would if I weren't a donkey who sleeps like a log.
I've noticed.
Seriously, once you start seeing your home as a collection of cubic meters rather than a collection of objects, the math gets uncomfortable. A bread maker you use twice a year, that's maybe 0.04 cubic meters, half a euro box. Is half a box worth it for something that mostly stores dust?
That's the shift Daniel's describing without quite saying it. The plastic supplier doesn't care about sentiment. They care about dimensions. So you end up asking yourself questions you never asked before.
Like, how many Euroboxes is my nostalgia?
And the answer is always more than you think.
Let's back up for a second, because I want to make sure we've properly framed what the Eurobox system actually is and why it forces this mindset. The Eurobox, properly called a KLT container, Kleinladungsträger, is built to the VDA 4500 standard. It's a German automotive industry spec. The footprint is 60 by 40 centimeters. Common heights are 14.7, 21, 32, and 42 centimeters. The 32 centimeter height is the sweet spot for most household goods, giving you 0.0768 cubic meters per box.
The magic isn't the box itself. It's what it connects to.
That 60 by 40 footprint is exactly 1/4 of a Euro pallet, which is 120 by 80 centimeters. So 4 boxes fill one layer on a pallet, or 8 if you alternate orientation. A standard 20-foot shipping container takes 11 Euro pallets in a single layer. Stack pallets 2 or 3 high, and you're looking at somewhere between 1,400 and 2,000 boxes per container.
The system is box nests into pallet, pallet nests into container nests into ship or truck. Every interface is designed. Nothing is improvised.
That's what Daniel found when he went to the plastics supplier. They didn't ask what was in the boxes. They didn't ask how much it weighed. They asked how many cubic meters he needed to move, because in their world, the boxes can handle the weight. The only question is how much space your stuff occupies.
That's the question most people can't answer, not even within a factor of 2.
I've been thinking about why this is. We talked about the cognitive biases, linear anchoring, visibility bias, the area volume illusion, but there's also just a lack of practice. Nobody ever asks you to estimate the cubic volume of your kitchen. It's not on any test. It's not a life skill anyone teaches.
Whereas weight and count are everywhere. How many people are coming? How heavy is that box? We're drilled in those from childhood.
Volume literacy is basically absent from daily life unless you work in shipping, warehousing, or maybe catering. And even then, it's usually container volumes you're working with. How many liters is this pot? Not how many cubic meters is this room full of furniture?
Daniel's prompt is really about building a new kind of literacy from scratch. And the good news is, the tools exist. They're just not obvious until someone points them out.
The room as box method we walk through is the foundation. But I think there's an intermediate step worth naming explicitly. Before you can estimate a whole room, you need to calibrate on something smaller.
The bookshelf test.
A bookshelf is perfect because it's a defined rectangle. It's full of objects with regular shapes, and you probably know roughly how many books you own. So you can cross-check your volume estimate against a count-based estimate and see if they line up.
Walk me through it.
Take a standard Billy bookcase from IKEA, 80 centimeters wide, 30 centimeters deep, 202 centimeters tall. That's about 0.48 cubic meters of total volume. But the shelves and frame eat some of that, and books don't fill perfectly. So the actual volume of books inside is probably closer to 0.3 to 0.35 cubic meters.
Which is about 4 or 5 Euro boxes.
Now, if you count the books, say you've got about 200 paperbacks, you can estimate their volume another way. A typical paperback is roughly 0.0008 cubic meters. 200 of those is 0.16 cubic meters, plus some hardcovers, plus air gaps. Suddenly, your two estimates converge around the same number, and you've calibrated your eyeball against a known quantity.
Once you've done that with a bookshelf, you can do it with a closet, then a room. Each step builds on the last.
The key is doing it deliberately the first few times. Don't just glance at a closet and guess. Actually stand there, look at the dimensions, do the multiplication in your head, then check with a tape measure. The feedback loop is what builds the intuition.
Which brings us back to Daniel's actual situation. He's got camera gear, light stands, audio equipment, lots of padding required. That's a hard case for estimation.
It is, but there's a trick for irregular items. You don't estimate the object, you estimate the box it would fit in.
The bounding box method.
A tripod folded up is maybe 60 centimeters long, 15 wide, 15 deep. That's 0.0135 cubic meters. But you can't pack tripods like sardines. They need padding, and the box has to accommodate the head and the feet. So you mentally double or triple that to account for the actual box it'll go in. Now you're at 0.03 or 0.04. Multiply by 3 light stands, and you're at 0.1. Add cameras, lenses, audio recorder, cables. Suddenly, Daniel's estimate of 4 Euro boxes for his video gear makes perfect sense.
If he'd estimated by weight, he'd have guessed 1 box, maybe 2. 15 kilos is nothing. You carry that under one arm.
Which is the trap. Weight tells you almost nothing about volume for this class of goods. A down comforter weighs 3 kilos and fills an entire Eurobox. A dumbbell weighs 10 kilos and fits in the palm of your hand.
The first skill Daniel needs is learning to see volume instead of weight. To look at a pile of stuff and think, that's about 0.3 cubic meters, rather than that's about 20 kilos.
The way you learn that is the calibration drill. Guess its volume. Note the error. After 5 to 10 iterations, your brain starts processing depth automatically. It stops flattening everything to 2 dimensions.
The research on this is genuinely encouraging. People who do structured estimation training, guess, measure, feedback, repeat, cut their error rates from around 40% to under 15% within a single session of 10 trials. The brain adapts fast when it gets immediate feedback.
I wonder if part of the speed is that we actually do have some latent volume perception. We navigate three-dimensional spaces all day. We don't walk into walls. Our motor system knows where objects are in depth. It's just that our conscious estimation system doesn't have access to that information until we train the connection.
That's a fascinating idea. You're saying the data is there, but the reporting pipeline is broken.
Something like that. Your body knows how far away the back wall of the closet is. It just doesn't report that number to the part of your brain that answers the question, how big is this closet, until you practice making that connection explicit.
Let's put this into practice with a real example. Daniel's home office. Say it's 3 meters by 4 meters, ceiling at 2.5. That's 30 cubic meters raw. Subtract 20% for the walls in the built-in shelving he's probably not moving. You're at about 24 cubic meters of actually packable volume.
Within that, the desk, chair, shelves, and equipment might occupy 4 to 6 cubic meters of actual object volume, which translates to 50 to 80 Euroboxes for the office contents.
That range, 50 to 80, is wide enough to be forgiving, but narrow enough to be useful. You're not going to order 20 boxes and run out. You're not going to order 200 and have a garage full of empties.
That's the goal, right? Not being wrong by a factor of 3.
The weight comparison really drives this home. Daniel's tripod weighs maybe 2 kilos. In a box with padding, it occupies roughly 0.05 cubic meters. If you're thinking in weight, you'd toss the tripod in with some other light stuff and call it a day. But volume-wise, that tripod is 2/3 of an entire Eurobox all by itself.
Because it's not just the tripod. It's the tripod plus the air required to keep it from smashing into whatever's next to it. Weight thinking ignores air. Volume thinking treats air as real estate.
Air is the most expensive thing in a moving container. You're paying for cubic meters, not kilos. Every liter of empty space you didn't account for is money you're spending to ship nothing.
The room as box method gives you the upper bound. The density cheat sheet gives you a cross-check for specific categories. And the calibration drill trains your gut. Those three tools together are the answer to Daniel's question.
I want to add one more because it's the one people skip. Always, always add 20 to 30% to your final box count for packing inefficiency. Irregular shapes, padding, the fact that your neatly folded sweaters will expand the moment you close the lid. Real-world packing efficiency is 70 to 85% of nominal box volume.
Which means a 0.0768 cubic meter Eurobox might only hold 0.055 to 0.065 cubic meters of actual stuff. That gap is where the extra boxes come from. And it's better to have 10 empty boxes at the end than to be standing in your half-packed kitchen at 11 p.m. realizing you're short.
The voice of experience.
Six moves, corn.
Now, once you can estimate volume, the real fun begins. It changes how you organize entirely. You start asking whether an item earns its volume. A bread maker you use twice a year occupies roughly 0.04 cubic meters. That's half a Eurobox. Half a box, sitting in your kitchen storing something that mostly stores dust. When you think in weight, a bread maker is just kind of heavy. When you think in volume, it's a line item on a spatial balance sheet.
That's a different calculus than cost. You might have paid 50 shekels for it at a jumble sale. The money's already gone. But the cubic meters are still being spent every day just by keeping it.
This is what I'm calling the volume budget concept. Treat your home like a logistics warehouse. Each room has a volumetric capacity. If your bedroom can physically hold 40 cubic meters of stuff before it becomes unlivable, and you've got 50 cubic meters of possessions assigned to that room, something has to go. Not because it's cluttered, because the math doesn't work.
Which forces decluttering decisions based on physical constraints, not sentiment. You're not asking, does this spark joy? You're asking, does this fit in the 40 cubic meter budget I've allocated to this room? And the budget is ruthless in a way that sentiment isn't. A volume budget just says no.
The pallet logic extends the same thinking upward. Once your stuff is in Euroboxes, you're not just organizing a room, you're organizing a supply chain.
A Euro pallet holds 8 boxes per layer. A 20-foot shipping container holds 11 pallets. That's 88 boxes per layer. Stack 2 or 3 layers high, and you're at roughly 1,400 to 2,000 boxes per container.
Which makes international moving costs predictable in a way they never are with random cardboard. You pay by the container, not by the box. If your life fits in one TEU, you know the price before you back a single item.
That's the environmental angle Daniel hinted at. Single-use cardboard moving boxes have a carbon footprint of about 0.5 kilogram of CO2 per box, manufacturing plus disposal. A typical 3-bedroom move burns through 50 to 80 of those. That's 25 to 40 kilos of CO2 per move.
Multiply by 6 moves, Daniel's scenario, and you're at somewhere between 150 and 240 kilos of CO2, just from cardboard.
That's not counting the tape. The tape alone on a full move is an environmental crime scene. Euroboxes, used over those same 6 moves, eliminate all of that. The upfront plastic has its own footprint, sure. But these things last decades in industrial settings. The per-move cost, environmental and financial, trends towards zero.
What do you actually do with all this? Here are 4 concrete steps.
First one's the room, as box method. Measure your room dimensions, length, width, height in meters. Subtract 20% for walls and built-ins, then divide by 0.0768. That's your rough Eurobox count for that room. Do this for every room before you order a single box, and write it down. Don't trust your memory mid-move.
Second step is the density cheat sheet. You don't need to memorize 20 categories. Free will get you most of the way there. Clothes and fabric bins, about 0.15 cubic meters per 10 kilos. Books, 0.02 per 10 kilos. Kitchen items, 0.08 per 10 kilos.
Those 3 numbers cover the bulk of what most people own. If you got 30 kilos of clothes, that's roughly 0.45 cubic meters, 6 Euroboxes. If you've got 50 kilos of books, that's 0.1 cubic meters, barely 1.5 boxes. The density difference is enormous, and the cheat sheet catches it.
Third step is the calibration drill. Pick one shelf or closet. Guess its volume in cubic meters. Just eyeball it, no measuring. Then grab a tape measure and check. Do that once a week for a month. Your brain will start processing depth automatically.
The research says 5 to 10 trials is enough to drop your error rate from 40% down to under 15. That's not months of practice. That's a single afternoon if you're motivated.
Fourth, always add 20 to 30% to your final box count. Packing inefficiency is real. A 0.077 cubic meter box holds maybe 0.06 of actual stuff. That gap compounds across a whole house. It is infinitely better to have 10 empty boxes stacked in the corner than to be standing in your half-packed kitchen at 11 p.m. realizing you're short.
The broader point underneath all 4 of these is that volumetric thinking is a skill, not a talent. Nobody's born knowing how many cubic meters their wardrobe occupies. But anyone can learn it, and once you do, it transfers to everything.
Travel luggage, for one. You start looking at a suitcase and thinking, that's about 0.1 cubic meters. My clothes are 0.15. Something's not fitting. Instead of the usual method, which is packing everything you own and then sitting on the lid.
Urban planning, too. Parking minimums, housing density, public transit capacity. These are all volumetric problems that get discussed in square meters because that's what people can visualize. But the third dimension matters. A city is a volume, not a map.
Daniel's prompt started with plastic boxes and ended up here, which is exactly how good prompts work. The specific thing, how do I estimate how many Euro boxes to buy, opens into a bigger question about how we see our own stuff.
The answer is learnable, room as box, density cheat sheet, buffer for air, 4 steps, and you'll never look at a closet the same way again.
I think that's where this is all heading, culturally. Right now, knowing your weight and height is basic. But as more people adopt modular storage, Euro boxes, really useful boxes, whatever the system, volume estimation becomes the same kind of literacy. How many cubic meters is your apartment? Should be as answerable as how many square meters is it?
Except, we don't teach it. Schools drill area calculations for years. Volume gets a unit in geometry and then vanishes. Nobody graduates high school able to eyeball the cubic volume of their own bedroom.
Which is strange, because volume is the dimension we actually live in. We don't inhabit square meters, we inhabit cubic meters. The air above our heads, the space under the bed, the gap between the top shelf and the ceiling, that's all real, and it's all volume.
Daniel's prompt, underneath the Eurobox specifics, is really asking, what would it take to make volume literacy as basic as weight literacy? And the answer seems to be not much. A tape measure, a few calibration drills, and a willingness to be wrong the first few times.
If you're moving, or just want to think differently about your stuff, try the eyeball calibration drill this week. Estimate the volume of your bedroom. Just stand in the doorway, do the multiplication in your head, write down a number. You might surprise yourself.
I'd bet most people are off by at least a third.
I'd take that bet. And the beautiful thing is, being wrong the first time is how you get right the second time. That's the whole point of calibration. Now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
For centuries, scholars believed the Inca used quipu, knotted string records, primarily as numerical accounting ledgers for tracking llamas and grain stores. Then in the early 1500s, a Portuguese navigator shipwrecked on Réunion Island described seeing the local population using remarkably similar knotted cords, which led to the briefly popular but entirely wrong theory that the Inca had somehow colonized the Indian Ocean. It was later corrected. The Réunion cords were an independent invention for recording genealogies, not warehouse inventories.
Right.
This has been My Weird Prompts, thanks to our producer, Hilbert Flumingtop. If you enjoyed this, leave us a review wherever you listen. It helps. We're back next week.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth's slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep, the stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too, from half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close, from sloth, from man, from long ear. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.